صلى الله على محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين. صلى الله وسلم.
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد.
As we continue with the night of Muharram, tonight inshallah is the night of Ashura. And again, like I mentioned a couple other nights, as we sit here commemorating the martyrdom of our dear Imam, let us all take a second, a moment to thank Imam al-Hussein for giving us the chance, the opportunity, giving us the tawfiq to come and sit in his majlis again on the night of the 10th of Muharram. Again, this is not an opportunity, it's not a fursa, it's not something that everyone gets a chance to do. There are those who have passed away, they're not here with us during these nights, and we remember them in our du'as and in our a'mal. And there are those, na'udhu billah, there are those who are still living, but for whatever reason, they don't have the chance to be here. Some of them may be attending from far away. Some of them, na'udhu billah, we are part of this final last group. Some of them are not even attending from far away. Sometimes you find that the lifestyle that you have been living for the past 10 years, it changes. Till last year, your concern was, I want to be in the majlis of Imam Hussein. This year, your concern is something else. Maybe the 10th of Muharram comes, you're not even so enthusiastic about going to the majlis of Imam Hussein, for whatever reason. But this is something that didn't happen to this gathering. This is something that we have to thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for. Don't underestimate this. Recite the salawat. Alright, so last night I'm going to go through the ahkam very quickly tonight. And there is a reason, brothers and sisters, why I am taking your time. Let me just put it this way. Every little thing that I say, I have put thought behind it. There's a reason why I am taking your time on the night of Ashura to go through every single one of these points. Don't let it cross your mind that, you know, we just put something together, like, you know, it's the night of Ashura, you know, people are going to be there, so let's just say some stuff, okay? There's a reason why I am taking your time with every single one of these points. Especially the ahkam, there's a reason why I am taking your time with the ahkam, okay? So, let's go through the ahkam very quickly. Last night we mentioned a very important ruling. We said that if someone comes, you're praying, you're in prayer, someone comes inside and says salamu alaykum, hope we know that responding to salam is wajib. But we said the most important thing is, first you have to wait to see if anyone else responds. Sometimes there are other people who aren't praying. When that person comes in and he says salam, he's saying salam to everyone. Right? You have to wait to see if anyone who's not praying, does he say salam or not? If he says salam, khalas, you don't have a responsibility anymore. And if you say salam then your prayer is batil. Because you didn't have a responsibility. It's like you're talking in salam. But, we said if no one is there, or no one says salam, then you have to respond even in salat. Even in your prayer, you have to respond. But there was one very important point. That one very important point was this, that you have to respond the same way that he said salam. If he said salamu alaykum, you say salamu alaykum. If he said assalamu alayk, you say assalamu alayk. If he said alaykum assalam, you say alaykum assalam. Okay? Because the fuqaha, our jurists, the maraji, they have a ruling here where they may say that you have to say that exact phrase that he used when he was saying salam to you. Recite the salawat. Alright, so that's what we went through last night. I don't want to take any more time with the ahkam so much, just to go over what we went through last night. Let's go and start to talk about our main topic tonight, inshallah. The first thing that I want to mention, brothers and sisters, is it's a short story. Okay? And this story can show us who the Ahlul Bayt are, at least an aspect of the character of the Ahlul Bayt. To a certain degree, it will show us who these individuals are. Because let me tell you something. Us sitting here, we don't understand where the Ahlul Bayt are. Okay, we don't understand it. We understand a little bit of who they are. We understand a little bit of how kind they are, how merciful they are, how much fadl, rahmah they have. We understand a little bit. Okay? But we don't understand it to the full extent. These stories help us push towards us understanding the character of our imams just a little bit more. Just a little bit more. If I want to go into just the ahadith that we have about the status of the imam, the maqam of our imams, some of the traditions, if someone hears them, for a second you might think, no, there's no way that's true. Right? We have traditions where the imam says, listen, if you want to praise us in any way that you want to praise us, that's fine, just don't say we're God. You know what that means? We're not God, because if you say that, that's haram and you're kafir. So that... But anything below that, all of the attributes of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in a limited form, who has them? The imams have them. Cool. Let's go through one short story. This happened during the time of Imam al-Rada salawatullahi alayhi. During the time of Imam al-Rida, you know that Imam al-Rida, he was living at the same time as a number of khulafa. And usually when we say Imam al-Rida, the person that comes to our mind on the other side is who? Is Ma'mun. Usually that's... But we know that Amin was also there, the brother of Ma'mun, and also the father of both of these, la'natullahi alayhim ajma'in, Harun was also there during the lifetime of Imam al-Rida. Of course, there's a reason why when we say Imam al-Rida, automatically our mind goes towards Ma'mun. And inshallah, on the 28th of Safar, we will talk about Ma'mun and what he did. Ma'mun, the history of what Ma'mun did, is not like any of the other khulafa that we have, brothers. Ma'mun was different from practically everyone. Just give you a sneak peek. Ma'mun, the same way Bani Umayyah had this big guy called Muawiyah, and everyone considered him to be the guy when it came to Bani Umayyah. In Bani al-Abbas, who was the guy? Ma'mun was the guy. That's why when we say Imam al-Rida, the first person that comes to our mind is who? It's Ma'mun. Okay. What happened during the time of Imam al-Rida? Imam al-Rida was living his life. Ma'mun sometimes, simply because he wanted to pressure the imam, he wanted to cause problems for the imam, he would send people to the house of the imam to bother and pressure the imam. Sometimes, even from a strategic point of view, what he was doing didn't even make sense. He was just doing it to pressure the imam. So what Ma'mun does is he goes and he hires one of the thugs of the city. A thug. You know what a thug is, right? The type of person who's loose, who does whatever he wants to do. He's an outlaw. This person was called Al-Jaludi. Ma'mun goes and hires him. He says, come here. Jaludi comes. He says, listen, I'm going to give you a free pass. You go to the house of Ali ibn Musa, and you take whatever you want to take. It's a free pass. I'm not going to hold you responsible. You just go there and you take whatever you want to take. You do whatever you want to do. Khof. Jaludi, looking forward to an opportunity like this, he leaves and he goes to the house of Imam al-Rida. As he enters the house of Imam al-Rida, Imam al-Rida stops him at the very beginning. Imam al-Rida confronts him. He says, what are you doing? Ma'mun gave me a free pass. I'm here to take all the gold and silver that you have in the house. So Imam al-Rida says, okay, wait a second. You want all the gold and silver, right? Khop. There are women and children inside the house. let's make a deal. The deal is this. You don't come inside the house so that the women or children are not frightened, right? So that there isn't a non-mahram in the house. And what I will do is, I will bring you all the silver and gold that I have. I'll bring it to you. Just don't go in there. Hope, what do you think Jaludi did? Jaludi sat there for a second, he thought about it. I said, he's going to bring me anything anyways. This guy never lies anyways. He said, okay. Mamaruda told him to stop. He went, he brought his wealth. And look at the ghorba, look at the loneliness of our imam. That he has to make a deal, right? Just so that they don't enter his house. Imagine the imam is walking with all of his wealth, and he's just surrendering it. It doesn't get any more lonely than that. Hope, the imam comes, gives Jaludi.
Where did my brother go?
All the gold and silver that he has. Jaludi leaves, and this finishes. Years pass by. The political platform switches. Everything changes. Why? Because Ma'mun now feels the necessity to take Ali ibn Musa and place him as his waliaht, as his crown prince. So now Ali ibn Musa, who was being pressured every single day, now he is going to rise in the eyes of everyone. Khop. Ali ibn Musa is now the waliaht. Whatever Ma'mun wants to do, he wants to get who involved? He wants to get Ali ibn Musa involved. So there comes a time where Ma'mun wants to clean the city of all the thugs, all of the loose people, all the thieves. He sits there, and Ali ibn Musa is sitting by his right hand. And every one of these that they bring, these two, Ma'mun, leans in to Imam al-Ridha, and they discuss what they should do with this person. A couple people come and go, and Ma'mun makes a decision for them. And then guess who comes? Jaludi comes. Years after what had happened, Jaludi comes this time. Jaludi comes there, he stands there. Ma'mun leans in to Imam al-Ridha to start discussing what should we do with this person. Imam al-Ridha, before Ma'mun speaks, he says, listen, years ago, I made a deal with this person. And he held up his promise. This person, don't take his life. But you know what Jaludi did? As they were discussing, Jaludi sat there and said, Ma'mun, whatever Ali ibn Musa says, do the opposite of it. This is the story of us. We don't understand how the Ahlul Bayt are merciful. We don't understand it. It says, Ma'mun, whatever he says, do the opposite of it. Ma'mun says, sure, I will. So Ali ibn Musa says, don't take his life. Ma'mun says, okay, we'll take your life because you wanted the opposite of it. And that's what happens. Now, put aside how bad of a decision Jaludi made in that particular case, how bad he looks at the Imam, how bad he views the Imam, put that aside. But look at the karam, the rahmah, the mercy of Ali ibn Musa al-Ridha. That this person just made a deal with him not to take a step further than this line into the house. And Ali ibn Musa al-Ridha holds his promise, he holds it up. Brothers and sisters, tonight, make a promise with Imam al-Hussein. Ya Imam al-Hussein, 1, 2, 3 habits I have. I know this brings pain to your heart every time I do haram with these 2 or 3 habits. I know it brings pain to your heart. But I will make a deal with you tonight. Even though this means you're lonely, that I have to make a deal with you about the haram that I am doing. But still, Ya Imam al-Hussein, I will stop this stuff so that on the day of judgment, Yawm al-Qiyamah, you will be there for me. Recite the salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Alright, so this was just one story for us to understand the karam, the mahabbah of the Ahlul Bayt. Tonight also is the night of that usually they do the musibah of Ali and al-Asghar. Brothers and sisters, we will never understand what Hussein has done for us. One of the ways you can understand is just imagine Hussein holding his child in his hand, and this child is bleeding and everything, all the musibah that we will go through inshallah. Hussein is doing this so that 1400 years later, you and I can be sitting here in his majlis and learning a little bit of about Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. That's how Hussein loves you. That he's willing to give everything so that humankind can sit there and learn about Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This is the karam of the Ahlul Bayt. Okay, let's move on to our main topic. Although I think we'll have to break it up for tomorrow night as well. But one of the things that we want to discuss tonight, inshallah, is how the Ahlul Bayt viewed death. How the Ahlul Bayt viewed al-maut. This is one of the most important teachings that we have in Islam. This is one of those things that when they say you're a Muslim, you can be proud of. The way Islam teaches you to look at death. And it's so balanced that you have the good things, which we will talk about, and then you have the scary things as well, which we will talk about. It's not like some happy, nice ending that, yeah, you know, you do whatever you want and then at the end it's fine, it's going to be fine because this guy called, you know, maybe Abu al-Fadl Abbas is going to jump in and save everything for you. It's not like that. But then we also have the concept of shafa'at at the same time. It's very balanced. There's a lot of i'tidad going on here. Okay. Let's start out with one hadith just so we understand the importance of this concept. Okay. Now usually, before I move on, in our cultures, whether the Western culture or even our own cultures, right? Like, for example, I'm Iranian. Even in the Iranian culture, whenever you talk about death, they say, no, don't talk about death, right? It's depressing, right? It's sad. Don't think about that too much. You're 25, you're 26, you should live your life right now. Listen, the way Islam teaches us about death, if you don't think about it, you will get depressed. You remember what we said the first couple nights of how this world is everything here is limited and the unlimited is somewhere else? Hope, if we don't talk about death, you're taking that unlimited away from me. That's what's depressing. Not if I talk about death. Death? Talking about death? Leaving this limited world where everything comes with pain. Everything comes with pain. Your child is going to be born, it comes with pain. Your child is going to leave, it comes with pain. While the child is here, he gets sick, he has pain. Everything here is pain. If we don't talk about death, we'll be depressed. If we don't talk about death, we'll be sad. Okay. Let's go through this first hadith. And this is, again, a story from Prophet Ibrahim. Salawat. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. The point that we want to draw from this hadith is this, brothers and sisters. The way that the day that you and I die is either the best day of your life, or it's the worst day of your life. It sounds extreme, but that's the truth of the matter. Prophet Ibrahim is walking one day, and he sees an angel. He says, which angel are you? He says, Ana Malikul Maut. I'm the angel of death. So Ibrahim asks him a question. Says, if you're Malikul Maut, I just have this one request. I just want to see how you look when you take the life of a good person. Of course, the tradition says mu'min, and there is a specific definition of what we mean by mu'min in the ahadith. I want to see how you look when you take the life of a mu'min. So what does Malikul Maut do? He says, listen, forget about it. He says, why? He says, La tutiq. You won't be able to take it. Ibrahim insists. He says, okay, A'rid anni, turn away for a second, and then turn back. So that's what Ibrahim does. Ibrahim turns away and turns back. And and he looks at this Malikul Maut, who looks like a young, handsome man, and it's so pleasurable being in that moment that he faints. Ibrahim faints from the pleasure of seeing how Malikul Maut looks when he's taking the life of a mu'min. He gets back up, and he says this one sentence. He says, listen, if the reward of a mu'min for his whole life of obeying Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is just to see you like this the moment you're taking his life, that's enough for him. If his reward is just this, and there is no bihisht and, you know, like all the good stuff that we have over there, none of that is there, just this one moment, the immense pleasure that the mu'min feels when he sees you like this, that's enough for him. But then, brothers and sisters, comes the hard part. So Ibrahim then continues, and he says, now show me how you take the life of one who rejects the message of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. What does rejecting the message of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala mean? It means this. This person knows this is true. He knows this is the word of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Even though he knows, he rejects it. Again, Malikul Maut says, listen, forget about it. Let's not do this. He says, no, I want to do it. لا تطيق. I want to do it. He says, لا بأس. أعرض عني. So he looks away. He looks back. This time Malikul Maut has a look on that is so frightening. There is fire coming out of Malikul Maut that again Ibrahim faints. He gets up and he says the same sentence. He says, if the punishment of someone who disobeyed Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for his life is just seeing you like this for one moment, this is enough for him. So death, brothers and sisters, is either the best day of our lives, or it is the worst day of our lives. Recite the salawat. Okay. So we have these two sides, these two options when we talk about death. Usually, however, in our cultures, and again, when I say our cultures, I'm always going to go back to the Iranian culture just because I know it better. There is this idea that death is always frightening. That death is always scary. But when you look at our ahadith, you find that's not the case at all. One of these ahadith that we will go through, the first time I read it, I thought I misunderstood it. I was like, no, this doesn't make sense. And trust me, when I read the first phrase, that's exactly what you would think. I said, this doesn't make sense, it's not even possible. But then the Imam explains what he means, and then you see, no, it is possible. Recite a salawat. The hadith says this. لو أن مؤمنا. This is a hadith from Imam al-Sadiq, who is narrating from Rasulullah. لو أن مؤمنا أقسم على ربه. If a mu'min, again, there's a specific definition for who is considered a mu'min. Keep that in mind. لو أن مؤمنا أقسم على ربه. If a mu'min asks Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, he swears to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and la yumitahu, that I don't want to die, if that's his request, ma amatahu abada, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will not take his life. Hope, does that make sense to you, brothers and sisters? So, I don't want to die. Who wants to die? I don't want to die. So, the hadith is saying, لو أقسم على ربه, if I sit here and I say, Ya Allah, don't take my life, the hadith, apparently, says that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will not take my life. So, all of us are going to be like, Ya Allah, don't take our life, خلاص, we're done. But then the hadith starts to explain. First of all, this is a mu'min, so a kafir doesn't really get this opportunity. Again, by a kafir, please understand this. This is a very important point. By a kafir, we mean someone who knows what the truth is, and he rejects it. Usually in our discussions, when we say kafir, our mind goes to a certain group of people. It's not necessarily who we're talking about. Kafir means whoever understands something that is true and doesn't accept it. Then the Imam explains, وَلَكِنْ إِذَا كَانَ ذَلِكَ أَوْ إِذَا حَذَرَ أَجَلُهُ. But let me tell you how death works then. This is how death works. When the time of death comes, when the ajal of this person comes, what happens? بَعَثَ اللَّهُ عَزَّ وَجَلَّ إِلَيْهِ رِيحَيْنِ. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sends towards this person two breezes. You know what a breeze is, right? A light, like wind is blowing, when it turns light, they call it a breeze. بَعَثَ اللَّهُ إِلَيْهِ رِيحَيْنِ يُقَالُ لَهَا الْمُنْسِيَةِ وَآخَرْ يُقَالُ لَهَا الْمُسْخِيَةِ. So two breezes. What does each one of these do? فَأَمَّا الْمُنْسِيَةَ فَإِنَّهَا تُنْسِيهِ أَهْلَهُ وَمَالَهُ. This person, the first breeze when it comes, it makes him forget about all the good things that he had in this world. وَأَمَّا الْمُسْخِيَةَ فَإِنَّهَا تُسْخِي نَفْسَهُ عَنِ الدُّنْيَا. The second breeze pushes him away from this world. It's a breeze. It's light. حَتَّى يَخْتَارَ مَا عِنْدَ اللَّهِ. It pushes him away so gently that this person himself sitting there, he says, I want to go. So you see the principle that the Imam said at the very beginning of the hadith still holds true. Still, if someone who doesn't want to leave this world is a mu'min, doesn't want to leave this world, he won't leave this world. You know what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala does? He makes you want to leave this world. Why? He is a mu'min. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala shows him what he has prepared for him. It's so beautiful for him that he himself says, I want to go myself. So yes, if you don't want to die, you don't have to die. But Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, he will make it look so nice for you. You say, I want to go myself. This is how our imams used to see death. When Qasim ibn al-Hasan says, أَحْلَى مِنَ الْعَسَلِ, this is what he is talking about. Recite a salawat. One more hadith, inshallah, and then we will end. And by the way, brothers and sisters, if you see in our cultures that we are so afraid of death, let me just say this. We're not trying to sit here and say we're not supposed to be afraid of death. What we're saying is this. You should be afraid of death because of what you're doing right now. That's what we're trying to say. Not because death is something bad necessarily. No, it might be something great. Yes, be afraid of it in the sense that you take a look at yourself. You say, I'm sitting in the majlis of Imam al-Hussein. Imam al-Hussein is giving me a chance again. I should be afraid not to go back to what I was doing maybe yesterday, the day before, a week ago. That type of being afraid, that's great. But being afraid of death, in the sense that whenever this is brought up, you say, oh, why did he create us to then kill us like this, and then we go through all this punishment? That's wrong, because death is not necessarily a punishment. It might be the best thing that ever happened to you. So let's take that khawf from death and focus it where? Right now. Because this is where you create your death. This is where you make death great for you or terrible for yourself. One more hadith, and inshallah, after that we will end. This is another person who comes to, again, Imam al-Sadiq, salawatullahi alayhi. قُلْتُ لَهُ أَسْلَحَكَ اللَّهُ. This person comes to Imam Sadiq and he says, أَسْلَحَكَ اللَّهُ. Who knows what aslahaka Allah means? Aslahaka Allah means, may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala fix you. Like in the sense that you have flaws, you have uyub, may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala fix these uyub for you. Now before I move on, when you take a look at our traditions, you find how gharib our imams are. This person is talking to the imam of his time, and he will refer to the imam as aslahaka Allah. Like, as if I'm talking to some one of the brothers. Okay? Just a note on the side, before we move on with the hadith, a note on the side. When you take a look at our literature, at our sources, at our ahadith, you find the imams were very gharib. In fact, a lot of times people didn't even consider them to be someone who is connected to the skies. You know how they would see our imams? If they were good people, this is how they would see our imams. They would say, they are very knowledgeable, mashallah. So, for example, about Imam al-Sadiq, who is the teacher of some of the imams that we have in other schools of thought. When it comes to him, they say, he's very pious, mashallah. He's very knowledgeable, mashallah. He has a lot of wisdom, mashallah. But is he connected to the skies? No, they don't go that far. And the people surrounding the imams throughout their lives, 90% of them were like that. They didn't even know this person is connected to this guy. In many cases, if the imam were to tell them that I am connected to this guy, they would accuse the imam of ghulub. You're exaggerating. Again, this is the ghurbah of our imams. Okay, so this person comes to the imam. It says, قُلْتُ لَهُ أَصْلَحَكَ اللَّهُ May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala fix you. I have a question. مَنْ أَحَبَّ لِقَاءَ اللَّهُ أَحَبَّ اللَّهُ لِقَاءَ If someone likes to see Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, if someone likes to meet Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, will Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala also like to meet him? Is it a two-way thing? So the imam says, yes. Okay. And then he says, وَمَنْ أَبْغَدَ لِقَاءَ اللَّهِ أَبْغَدَ اللَّهُ لِقَاءَ If someone doesn't like to see Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, is it true that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala also doesn't like to see this guy? To meet this guy? Again, the answer is what? قَالَ نَعَمْ That's how it works. قُلْتُ فَوَاللَّهِ إِنَّا لَنَكْرَهُ الْمَوْتِ He said, wait a second. If that's true, then I'm in trouble because إِنَّا لَنَكْرَهُ الْمَوْتِ We don't like to die. Whenever we speak about death, we don't like it. فَقَالَ لَيْسَ ذَاكَ حَيْثُ تَذْهَبُ It's not what you think it is. You're going the wrong way. إِنَّمَا ذَلِكَ عِنْدَ الْمُعَيَنَةِ This idea of you not liking to die is all before that moment where you see the other world. There's a moment when we die, they refer to it as mu'ayana. Mu'ayana means that you're seeing this world and the next world at the same time. Right? Something like what Ali ibn al-Akbar went through. Right? When Ali ibn al-Akbar was on the ground and he called out his father, he said, هذا جدي رسول الله. This is my grandfather. He's seeing that world and he's seeing this world at the same time. So this moment, they refer to it as what? As mu'ayana. The imam says, when the time of mu'ayana comes, إِذَا رَأَى مَا يُحِبُّ فَلَيْسَ شَيْءٌ أَحَبُّ إِلَيْهِمْ مِنْ أَنْ يَتَقَدَّمْ If he's a good person, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will show him what he has prepared for him, and nothing will be better for him in that second but to go towards those things. He will want to go. وَاللَّهُ يُحِبُّ لِقَاءَهُ وَهُوَ يُحِبُّ لِقَاءَهُ And then the principle that we mentioned holds true because he, in that moment, he wants to see Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and therefore Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala also wants to see him. And then the imam mentions the flip side. وَإِذَا رَأَى مَا يَكْرَهُ فَلَيْسَ شَيْءٌ أَبْغَدَ إِلَيْهِ مِنْ لِقَاءِ اللَّهِ If he sees the things that he doesn't like, in the sense that he's not a good person, he sees the punishments that are waiting there, there is nothing worse for him in that moment to tell him that you have to go there. فَهُوَ يُبْغِضُ لِقَاءَ اللَّهِ وَاللَّهُ يُبْغِضُ لِقَاءَ. So in that moment, again, the principle holds true. He doesn't want to go to meet Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala also doesn't want to meet this person, in the sense that this meeting is going to be painful, because there are punishments waiting for this individual. So these are just some of the traditions that we have regarding death. Again, we don't want to say we shouldn't be concerned about our death. No, that's the message, that's a wrong message. If you're walking away with that, you're walking away with the wrong message. What we're trying to say is, you should be worried about your actions right now, which will show themselves when you pass away. Inshallah, if we take care of what we have right now, inshallah, when the time comes, we will want to go ourselves. لَيْسَ شَيْءٌ أَحَبُّ إِلَيْهِ مِنْ أَنْ يَتَقَدَّمْ. Nothing will want to, you will want nothing to stop you from going. Yourself you will go. Okay. One last point, then we're going to end. Brothers, when we talk about meeting Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, when we talk about this liqa with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, as I mentioned yesterday, it's not that difficult. There is one very important key to it. That is this: whenever you do haram, you do tawbah quickly. Because you don't know, if I did haram right now, 5 minutes later, 10 minutes later, before I get the chance to do tawbah, maybe the time of my death comes. And then if it comes, يُطَهَّرُونَ مِن ذُنُوبِهِمْ, like we mentioned the other nights. So, bear in mind, and teach your children this as well, going to hell is very difficult. It's very difficult. It does happen to some people. We don't shy away from this. The Quran is full of خَالِدِينَ فِيهَا, خَالِدِينَ فِيهَا, خَالِدِينَ فِيهَا. No one can sit there and say, no, Islam is the religion of mercy. There is no such thing as hellfire. No, there is such a thing as hellfire. There is eternal punishment for some people. But let me tell you something. You have to be really messed up to have to go there. Why? You have to be so arrogant that when you do haram, you're not man enough to admit it. But trust me, if I was there, if I was God, I would punish you too. If you're not man enough to sit there and say, Astaghfirullah Rabbi wa atubu ilayh, Ya Allah, I'm going to try my best never to do this again. If you can't do that, where's your place? Your place is in hellfire. And we went through the verses that talk about hellfire and how scary and how frightening they are. So, with that, we bring our talk to an end, inshallah. Tonight, inshallah, we will have a short musiba and then the brothers will continue. Tonight is the night of one beloved son of Abu Abdullah. And tonight being the night of Ashura, it's the night of many of the companions of the Imam. It's the night of many of the beloved individuals in the caravan of the Imam. But we want to focus on this son of Abu Abdullah. And the musiba for tonight is plain and simple, brothers and sisters. It's not very difficult to recite the musiba of this child, of this infant, I should say. If you have a child yourself, if you have an infant yourself, if you have a young cousin, a young brother, a young sister, a young sibling, in the age of under a year old, in the age where the children cannot even speak yet, when something is hurting them, when something is bothering them, the only thing they can do is they can start crying. We had a friend who once told us this one story. He said that we had a child, and this child wakes up in the middle of the night. He's crying, and he's crying hard. So the mother wakes up, she doesn't know what to do. She starts running towards this child, picks up the child. The mother starts to do everything that she thinks is wrong with this child. And the child cannot speak even a couple words just to say what's wrong. So the mother starts hugging him. hoping for him to calm down, but he doesn't calm down. The mother starts to do other things to calm him down. He doesn't calm down. They say that we took him to the hospital. At one point, we were worried. We didn't know what to do. We took him to the hospital. We were waiting there. And then all of a sudden, we saw there's a small cup of water, and we saw this child leaning over to grab that water for himself. And this child is thirsty the whole way. He just can't say it. He just can't use words. This is exactly what happened to Ali and Al-Asghar. And it's not just on the day of Ashura. These last three nights, the water has been cut off from the haram of Aba Abdullah. All the elder men in these tents, they walk past by the tents of Ali and Al-Asghar, and they hear the cry of Ali and Al-Asghar. And Aba al-Fadl Abbas walks by his tents. And at one point, Ali ibn al-Asghar can't even cry anymore. He doesn't have the energy to cry anymore. And this is why the maqatil say, وَكَانَ يَتَلَذَّى عَتَشَى. At this point, Ali ibn al-Asghar is struggling just to show his mother that he's thirsty. Hussein has to watch this every single day. At one point, he tells Ali ibn al-Akbar, Ya Ali, go and bring water for them before the day of Ashura. They go, they fight in the battlefield, they're able to bring a little bit of water back. For a little while, Ali ibn al-Asghar calms down. It's as if he goes to sleep, this child. The next day, this child wakes up, he's thirsty, he's hungry again. The mother can't feed him anymore. The cry starts out again, and Hussein's heart is being teared up again. Abbas's heart is getting teared up again. Rubab's heart is getting teared up again. They don't know what to do with this child. All of the masaib on one side, the musibat of Ali ibn al-Asghar crying throughout this whole event on the other side. Abbas, when he came to ask for permission from Aba Abdullah, that's the cry he had in mind. He spoke of al-Atash, but the cry he had in mind was the cry of Ali ibn al-Asghar. And when Hussein looks around, all of these companions have gone to the battlefield. None of them have come back. At this point, he starts calling out these names. هَلْ مِنْ نَاصِرٍ يَنْصُرُنَا. Is there anyone who will defend the haram of Rasulullah? And it's as if this child wakes up all of a sudden and starts to cry. And Hussein says calmly, I know Ali, you're there, I know, but how can I take you to the battlefield when you're only 6 months old? How can I hold you? Hussein comes slowly towards the tent. Ya Zainab, this one sentence should burn your hearts. Ya Zainab, nawilini waladi, give me my child, the one child that's left for me, give me that one. And you can see the sadness and the concern on the face of Zainab. Hussein, where are you going to take Ali ibn al-Asghar? You took everyone else, none of them came back. Why Ali ibn al-Asghar? Ya Zainab, don't worry. I'm going to ask for water. Maybe they give this child a little bit of water. I'm going to say goodbye to Ali ibn al-Asghar for the last time. And before Hussein has the time to ask for anything, the enemies of the Ahlul Bayt strike the throats of this six-month-old. A six-month-old that with a pinch will start to cry. This arrow strikes the throat of this six-month-old. And Hussein is standing there holding this child and saying to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, I can only take it because you're watching. If you weren't watching, I wouldn't be able to take this, Ya Allah. He takes this beloved blood of Ali ibn al-Asghar, he throws it to the sky. And that blood has never come down since the day of Ashura. And then he takes Asghar to the back of the tents. Just imagine these critical moments. Hussein is walking slowly with this little baby in his hands, in his arms. And for everyone, he made this big grave. For Ali ibn al-Asghar, he makes this tiny little grave. He puts Ali and al-Asghar in it. How can Hussein even take this? He puts Ali and al-Asghar in it and slowly he pours dirt on Ali and al-Asghar. And he buries the one beloved one that he had left for him. Ala la'natullah ala al-qawm al-zalimeen. وَسَيَعْلَمُ الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا أَيَّ مُنْقَلَبٍ يَنْقَلِبُونَ.
يا رب الحسين حق الحسين اشف صدر الحسين بزهور حجة ابن الحسن المهدي
I ask permission from my brothers and sisters to also say a few words in English tonight for the hastening of the return of our imam. Please recite the salawat.
امشب شب قتل حسین آن شاه عدشان است زینب پریشان است در خیمه‌گاه شاهدی فریاد افغان است زینب پریشان است امشب بود قاسم کشی که خیمه مادر سالم ز پا تا سر فرداتنش پامال زیر سن اسبان است زینب پریشان است امشب حسین ابن علی دارد علم داری سردار و غم خاری فردا علم دارش به خون افتاد قنطان است زینب پریشان است امشب به دور شاهدی پروان اشیارا خیل هوادارا فردا عزیز فاطمه تنها به میدان است زینب پریشان شب آشوراست امشب کربلا غوغاست امشب امشب آخرین شبیه که رقیه راحت میخوابه امشب آخرین شبیه که زینب کنار برادره امشب آخرین شبیه که رباب علی اصغر رو بغل گرفته تو خیمه ها یکی داره نماز میخونه یکی داره دعا میکنه یکی داره استغفار میکنه یکی داره وصیت میکنه این شب شهد این تاب صبح اندر مناجات است، در ذکر آیات است، فردا سرش بالای نه باسات قرآن است، زینب پریشان است. امشب امام حسین نماز میخوند، میفرمود انی محب الصلاة، به لحظه امام حسین جدا شد، دیدن آبا نیست حبیب میگه، رفتم دنبال ابی عبدالله، دیدم داره گریه میکنه، نشسته هی خارای بیابون رو جمع میکنه. آقا جان چرا خارای بیابون رو جمع میکنی؟ فرمود حبیب فردا هممون رو شهید میکنن، خیمه ها رو آتش میزنن، بچه ها پای برهنه آواره میشن، خارا رو جمع میکنم بچه ها اذیت نشن. عصر عاشورا شد، امام حسین تنهای تنها بود، نه قاسمی نه علی اکبری نه عباسی، تنها میان میدون ایستاده، یهودی از تو خیمه ها صدای زنان میاد، گفته بود آهسته گریه کنم، برگشت زینب جون چرا گریه بلند میکنی؟ فرمود داداش این بچه خودشو از تو گهوار انداخت زمین، از تشنگی داره بال بال میزنه.
اوج روزه علی اصغر بیدینی کجاست؟ این یه جمله‌ای که بخوام بگم.
بچه رو رو دست گرفت، سر علی اصغر رو شونه میفتاد، دیگه جون در بدن نمونده، اوج روزه است، ارباب شما، مولای شما، کسی که همه عالم تو این دنیا به خواست خدا، هر کسی تو این دنیا با اون دنیا کاری داشته باشه، باید منت این آقا رو بکشه. رو به دشمن ایستاد، صدا زد منو علینا، بر ما منت بذاریم، فقال يا قوم إن لم ترحموني فارحموا هذا الترب. بهش آب دادن، نه فرماه رجل منه بسحم فلات شعر فضبه من الادون الى الادون، شد گلویم روی دستت زب، میدانی چرا حجم تیر از هنجر من بیشتر بود ای پدر؟
You know what it means when they say min al udun ila al udun? We have little infants here tonight. Look at their throats. How big is their throat? What would this arrow do to the throat of a little infant? What would remain from the throat of a little infant?
Hussein. غم مخور ای آخرین سرباز من،
قم مخور بهترین هم روز من قم مخور ای کودک خاموش من ات نگاهت می شود آغوش من قم مخور ای کودک دردی کشم من خودم تیر از گلویت می کشم الى روایات از بن سد و حضرت صاحب الزمان عجل الله تعالی فرجه الشریف returns in the ابتدا of his قیام the beginning of his قیام he would go to کربلا he would go and stand next to the grave of علی اصغر and said بأیدن بن قتلو حجت الاسلام سید مؤمنی said I heard this from one of the famous Zakirin in Iran that one day after the majlis of Imam Hussein and that I was going home in the street I saw a man holding a little child I thought maybe he's mustahab so I give him some money he looked at me and I saw his eyes full of tears He asked them, what's going on, brother? Is everything all right? He said, this afternoon, my little boy, he became sick. He became ill all of a sudden. I told his mom I would take him to the hospital. Don't worry, I will bring him back. But when I came here, I saw the heart is not beating. I don't know what to do. I cannot go back home. I promised the mother to bring the child back. Let me put it this way. They found him. Who did they find? Mukhtar found Harmale. They brought Harmale to Mukhtar. Mukhtar said, Harmale, what did you do in Karbala? Every time I bring someone from Qatalat of Imam Hussein, one of the killers of Imam Hussein, They say, I didn't do anything. Harmala did everything. What did you do, Harmala? Then Mukhtar asked them a question. This is in history. Harmala, you did all these things in Karbala. But did you ever cry? Did you ever experience a moment that you became sad for what you did? Harmala said, yes, there was a moment that I cried myself. Mukhtar asked, what was that moment? Harmala said, I had three special arrows. Falaf shu'ab, tiras shu'ab. They use it to hunt down beasts. I shot the first arrow to the eyes of Abbas ibn Ali. When he was bringing water back for the children of Hussein, I shot the third arrow to the heart of Hussein ibn Ali. The Maqtal says, let me read it from the Maqtal. The time came, أَتَاهُ حَجَرٌ عَلَى جَبْهَةٍ حَشَمَهَا ثُمَّ أَتَاهُ سَحْمٌ لَهُ ثَلَاثِ شُعَرٍ مَسْمُومٌ فَوَضَعَ عَلَى قَلْبِ الْحُسَيْنِ Okay, that was the first arrow. This was the third arrow. What about the second arrow? The second arrow was when Imam al-Hussein, when Hussein ibn Ali came to the battlefield. He was wearing the amama of Rasulullah. He had something in his hand. We thought, Hussein has brought Mus'haf al-Qur'an again. Maybe he wants to talk about Qur'an. We made loud sound. We didn't even want to hear the voice of Hussein. But then we heard the voice of a baby crying. Hussein has brought his little infant, Abdullah al-Wazir. He asked for water. There was a division in the army. Some people said, give him water. Some people said, no, they should all die out of thirst. How much water does a little baby want? Look at your little children. How much water do they drink? Umar ibn Sa'd looked at me and said, Harmale, put an end to this. End this. So I asked Umar, who should I target, the father or the son? He said, don't you see the white flesh of the neck of this baby? Mukhtar asked, so, is that when he cried, when you shot Ali Askar? He said, no. He said, no. You didn't cry, you killed the little infant, you didn't cry? No. So when did you cry? Said when Hussein was bringing this baby back to the tents, I saw Hussein going toward the tents. Then he turned back toward us. Then he stopped. He put his head down. Then he turned again, walked toward the tents, and then he stopped and came back. I looked far away. I saw a lady standing outside the tent. It was the mother of Ali Asghar. Hussein was shameful. He didn't know how to bring this baby back to the mother. How to show a mother a throat that has been pierced by a throat. Baby full of blood. We saw Hussein turned around. He went to a corner behind the tents. He dug a little grave. He kissed the baby and he buried the baby with his own hand. But Mukhtar, let me tell you something. In the night after Ashura, when all the heads were on top of the spear, you could see the head of Abdullah al-Wazir. In the afternoon of Ashura, when the soldiers were stealing everything, someone went to the back of the tents, started looking, putting their spear. They were looking for something that was the most precious to Hussein ibn Ali. They took out the little baby, they cut the head of the baby, and they put it on top of the spear. As-salamu alayka ya sahib al-zaman, ajarak Allah maulay.
Hussein, ya Hussein,
Hussein, ya Hussein. يقول خيالها العقيلة لقبل ما شافوا العقيلة القبل ما شافوا خيالها غيور وكان يحميها خيل هذيل عساكر ساعة الهجمة خيل خذا وزينب يا ابو الفيرس بي تقول تمنيت تمنيت راع الجود موجود تقول تمنيت اي والله تمنيت راع الجود موجود والله موجود ورتب له جفوفه فوق الزنود تقل لحقتك لحقتك على ريحة الخوة تقل لحقتك خويا على ريحة الخوة اي الخوة
حسين يا حسين حسين
حسين يا حسين حسين يا حسين حسين يا حسين رحم الله من ذكر القائم من آل محمد.
يا حسين
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 Señor, yo amo, yo amo,
Hussein,
where is my Hussein? Hussein,
Ya Mawla, Ya Mawla.
Medine kayıram baba, Medine kayıram baba. Men astam bo seretin ya, fedaye işe bor khunat, fedaye işe bor khunat. Rukiye dokhteret baba, fedaye نخواهم زندگی دیگر به برز اینجا مرا امشب به برز اینجا مرا امشب به حق مادرت بابا فدای ریش برخونت فدای
اکبرت بابا فدای ریش برخون
زینب ببین بر امم زینب قدش از غم گمان گشته از این صحرا به آن صحرا از این صحرا به آن صحرا به پشت طفلکان گشته فدای ریش پر خونت فدای ریش پر خونت رقیه دخترک بابا فدای ریش پر خونت فدای ریش پر خونت رقیه دخترک بابا چو ببیند که طفلانت چو ببیند که طفلانت به بند رسکان گشته چرا این ظلم پدر آخر چرا این ظلم پدر آخر شود بر خواهرت بابا فدای ریش پر خونت فدای ریش پر خونت رقیه
رسولت لا فتا الا علی در شأن تو ای رسولت لا فتا الا علی در شأن تو می برد شمر از سرت نعجر فکیف تصبه آل بو سفیان به عز فی بیوت آمنین آل بو سفیان به عز فی بیوت آمنین قال ما دور ذا وطن يا ليت قوم يعلمون أنعم الله علينا برسول المدني أنعم الله علينا برسول المدني هو جدي وأبي وواسط الكون علي خيارة الله من الخلق أبي خيارة الله من الخلق أبي بعد جدي فأنا ابن الخيرتين بعد جدي فأنا ابن الخيرتين أنا مظلوم حسين
أنا مظلوم حسين
أنا محروم حسين
أنا مظلوم حسين
أنا محروم حسين
أنا مظلوم حسين
أنا مظلوم حسين
أنا مظلوم حسين
عجبا با عجبا قلمت کفار که یک سر چشم پوشیده زهبت نمک آل بیان همه در ریختن خون من بی کس و یاد شده آماده و بگرفته به کف نیزه و خنده پس تجزون من الله اذا قام قیام ایم یا قوم تونیتون به بغیر و فساد لما سسعون به قتلی به لجاج و عناد ای سوا الله سوانا خلف بعد النبي فرض الله على طاعتنا كل عباده انا مظلوم حسين
انا مظلوم حسين
انا محروم حسين
انا مظلوم حسين
انا مظلوم حسين
انا مظلوم حسين
انا محروم حسين
انا محروم حسين
من له جد كجدي في الورى
من له جد كجدي في الورى أو كشيخي فأنا ابن العالمين فاطمة الزهراء أمي وأبي عاصم الكوف ببدر وحنين عبد الله غلاما يفرى وقريش يعبدون الوثنين يعبدون اللات والعزى معا وعلي 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 كان صلى قبلتين فأبي شمس الأمي غمرا
فأبي شمس الأمي غمرا
فأنا الكوكب وابن القمر أين أنا مغلوم حسين
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 أنا محروم حسين
أنا مغلوم حسين
زیر خنجر شغلب تشن حسین دو تو ای شمر ستم کار تو ای ملحد مکار تو ای کافر قدار اجر من نشناسی بگویم بشناسی حسینم دیا القمرینم قتیل الود جینم امام الحرمینم انا الفضت و ابن الذهبینم منم شهر جبری منم آیه تطهیر منم شهر جبری منم آیه تطهیر منم نخله خوبان منم زاده زهرا منم عرش و منم فرش منم کرسی و لوح و قلم و قائف ایجاد دوارم انا مغلوم حسین
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 يا الله لتجديد العهد مع صاحب العصر والزمان الصلاة على محمد وآل محمد
قل هو الله أحد قل